Say, I think the biggest thing that people benefit from is getting back to walking within certain guidelines. Obviously, it needs to be safe, but as long as they're walking effectively and they're being mindful about working on certain things. So one of the biggest things I'll talk to like a knee patient about and getting knee extension back, it's like, hey, try it. When you are walking, since you're not doing too much of it, I don't need you thinking and being, uber cerebral about how you're walking and everything. But if you're not doing too much walking right now, a good way to just get knee extension back is like try and keep your heel on the ground when you walk for as long as you can. You should feel a nice big stretch on the back of your knee. You'll feel it should feel a little bit more stable as you're walking too. So if he's just walking for like 2 or 3 minutes at a pace right now because he just got his knee replacement,
Right.
an easy way to literally just exercise it is like, hey, just be a little bit more mindful about how you're walking right now.
Campo, can you explain what just keeping the heel on the ground a little bit longer does in terms of
Yeah, that's what I was going
getting the
to
extension back?
say. So think about if I'm walking forward with my right foot, put my foot on the ground and I keep that heel down, and then I'm progressing my left side in front of my right side. If I keep the heel down for longer on the ground, in order to achieve that, I need to create more and more extension at other places. So what I'm delaying is extension at the ankle, so plantar flexion. And in order to delay that, I need to utilize knee extension or hip extension before I achieve that extension at the ankle. And that's how that they're going to achieve a little bit more knee extension. So what they're probably going to do, again, it's like kind of like that limp gait where they're going to almost like get off the foot as quickly as they can. One, because they don't have the knee extension to actually lock the knee out, which you're not really supposed to do during gait, but like I said, through like this little gait exercise, it's useful. What they do is they almost like hit their heel and then like push up onto their toes as quickly as you can. Just think about someone who's limping, right? So they'll hit their foot on the ground and they'll push real quick off their toes. So all I'm trying to do is just delay them as far as keeping their foot on the ground, delay how long their foot is pushing into the ground for a little bit longer. That necessitates all the other joints above it to try and attempt to do the same thing.
Switch gears a little bit and go back to this idea of timing of movements. And so why is timing of when things occur so important, and how does being able to achieve certain positions and access certain range of motions impact that?
Okay. So in order to move, we're pretty much just trying to redirect force and energy from one point to another point, right? So certain positions of joints, certain positions of bones, and certain positions of our pelvis enable us to actually, one, demonstrate that force production, and two, direct that force into a specific direction. Okay. So again, this is a lot of what Bill's talking about as far as like internal rotation allows for more force production. So as I pronate, that's enabling me to put more force into the ground, right? Because you don't really want to put force into the ground in supination. That would be like an ankle sprain. You don't really want to sprain your ankle. So as you pronate and put force into the ground, that enables that tibial internal rotation. So that starts to propagate that force up the rest of the body. So then you'll start to get femoral internal rotation. That changes the shape of the pelvis as well as how it's rotated. So as that force starts to enter the pelvis or that energy starts to enter the pelvis, that shape starts to one, help capture that force and that energy. Then the other subsequent motion helps to direct that force, whether it's, ipsilateral, contralateral, things like that. So that's where kind of like the rotation of the sacrum comes in, or the position of the entire pelvis as a whole will come in. So if I'm trying to go left, but my pelvis is facing right, and I'm trying to push through my right foot, that almost becomes like a stop gate or a blockage for that force. And it almost dampens it too much to where it becomes not as efficient as it could be. It's almost like I'm trying to get out of a right foot cut but my pelvis is still going into a right foot cut, that's not very effective if I'm trying to actually be, you know, as far as like advantage for performance or juking someone out or capturing an offender or something like that. So,
gotcha.
25-year-old post-op ACL has way more options as far as exercises I can perform with them, as opposed to a 80-year-old total knee replacement patient. There's much less positions that are available to us to utilize, right? So like, but a good example for how I try to use things globally is like, okay, quad sets are a really popular exercise right after knee surgeries. And so for people who don't know, a quad set is just, you're going to lay there, might put something underneath the back of the knee for a little reference. You push the back of the knee down into the table in order to pretty much get more quad action, right? And you can even get some hip extension from it as well. One of my main exercises that I'll try and do with people is I'll actually just put their foot on the wall while they're doing a quad set, and I'll cue different positions of the foot in order to control where their tibia is going while they're doing the quad set. Plenty of times people feel way better doing it. We get more motion out of it. There's less pinching and nagging pain as they do it. They have a little bit more of a stretch on the back of the knee, which is what we're going for, right? We're trying to get knee extension back. Then another thing that is really, that I think plays a big role as far as limited knee extension is the withdrawal reflex. So withdrawal reflex is like, if you touch something hot, you'll really pull your hand back really quick. Or if you step on a nail, you'll pull your foot up, right? So it's like a global flexion movement, right? So someone who's like post-op ACL, that's kind of how they present. So what I'll do is I'll even set them up in like a similar position of like their quad set. And I'll actually try and utilize the cross extensor reflex to initiate more of the extension. So really all they're doing is they're pushing their foot through the wall of the side that's being operated on. And then they'll just take their knee and they'll bring it up towards their chest, because the cross extensor reflex is, as one side flexes, the other side needs to extend. And so they'll just do sets of that. They'll do sets of their quad set, and that'll be effective exercise for them. Plus it's a pretty accessible position because all they're doing is just laying on their back. So really anyone of any age can do that, as long as they don't have other issues with other joints involved, which happens sometimes, but got to work around it a little bit. So the guy is riddled with like injuries and nagging pain and stuff like that. So his whole regimen was really just to, hey, let's get your motion back. Let's express it in different exercises and activities. He was extremely stiff. So I don't have a good way of measuring stiffness other than like, you know, get their arm or their leg in my hands and how does it feel? And you can kind of see it in their chessboard too, as far as how limited they are, right? But a big component of his training was, you know, he was coming from places that would really train him heavily. So let's do a lot of hip thrusts, deadlifts, back squats, you know, heavy stuff, focusing on strength, which, you know, it is important, I think, especially at that high level. You want to demonstrate force production. I think there's a bunch of different variables that go into force production, not just like how much weight can you lift, but kind of like with the whole timing thing, it's like maybe if you only generate your force within a specific amount of time or within a specific moment of time, and you're really effective at that, that's probably why there are some really good athletes who aren't like the strongest people in the world, but they know how to harness the force production appropriately and in the right direction, right? So that's kind of what we were working on with him. It's just like, okay, let's free you up. Like, you're really strong, but you don't move very well, and that's one lending to a lot of the injuries that you're experiencing. But then two, it's also increasing his performance by actually freeing up a lot of his motion, because now that's enabling him to demonstrate a lot of the force production he worked so hard on to create for himself, right? Rufus, wake up, man.
This is your podcast. You got to be on it.
He's like, We need to make a smoothie for you that's got coffee in it or something, man.
You were right over there?
I'm not asleep. I'm trying to follow what's going on.
Zooming out a little bit more. So that's like, say you have the knee joint specifically, or there are movements you can drive through like your shoulder, thorax, things like that to help with that motion as well. And like, what's kind of the mechanisms driving that?
So hang on. Get some smoothie.
Gives you energy.
Yep. So the tibia will follow a lot of what the talus will do and vice versa, right? So that's why I'll cue a lot of different foot positions for that individual. So say I'm trying to regain tibial internal rotation. Well, then I'm just going to cue a little bit more foot pronation. That'll help with regaining a lot of that tibial internal rotation. I'll even say like, hey, if you push, you know, the ball of your foot and the inside of your heel into the wall, do you feel how your shin will actually turn in when you do that? And they'll be like, yes. I'm like, okay, great. Keep doing that, right? That'll be buy-in for them as well. The other thing too that we're trying to achieve, and this kind of goes back to the gait discussion and kind of delaying that foot on the ground. So that'll be a little bit more internal rotation at the hip as they're walking. So even with like that cross extensor exercise where they're just doing a marching activity, as they bring that opposite leg up towards their chest, that'll actually help to reshape the pelvis into a position that allows for more internal rotation to be demonstrated at the femur and at the tibia itself to enable a little bit more of that extension to occur. So that'll be another way in which I'm trying to drive a lot of those mechanisms too.
Can you explain how flexing one hip, extending the other, would drive internal rotation on the extending side?
So from, and this is a lot of Bill's stuff. So he'll talk about like everything is just transverse plane, right? So everything's all rotation. So as well as, you know, this is actually a cool little example. So it's all shape change and it's all rotation, right? So if you take your leg up into flexion, the muscles will reorient to create a shape of the actual pelvis. That would be nutation of the sacrum and a posterior orientation of the ilium. It widens the IPA. And what happens is the acetabulum will actually antevert to allow for more internal rotation to be demonstrated. So if you, in order to get full extension of a hip, the same shape needs to be present as well. So in something like a marching activity, one side is demonstrating internal rotation, and the other side is also demonstrating internal rotation because of the shape of the pelvis insofar as how it's being reshaped as you're doing that motion.
Explain why driving some of these rotations above and below a joint you're working at may restore motion in what we typically would consider like a more front to back sagittal plane type movement.
But I this is like the knee podcast, I guess, but I think knees are a good example of it, because
good stuff.
People liken, like you said, the knee to a door hinge or a hinge joint, right? But there's actually a considerable amount of rotation that needs to occur in order to actually have the joint glide effectively through all of its motion. So a big part of what I tell people and what I evaluate with a knee patient, even if it is a knee replacement patient, is that I need to try and restore some of that rotation back to that joint. And a lot of the times, even if I'll just take my hand as like an example for them. I'll just take my hand and I'll turn their joint into a position that they're not biased towards. So let's say you got someone who has a crazy amount of tibial ER. Best way to evaluate that would be like, find like tibial tuberosity and the pole of their patella and see like, okay, how malaligned is it pretty much? And I'll pretty much just turn it in and then I'll try and flex their knee as much as they're comfortable. And a lot of times they'll be like, oh, like it goes way farther. That feels way better. I don't get any of that pinching. It doesn't feel like it's getting bunched up, things like that. And that's it's great buy-in as far as like, okay, this guy actually knows what he's talking about. And two, it's great buy-in for, you know, you got to be a little bit more meticulous about how you're doing something as simple as a quad set in order to effectively regain some of the motion that we're trying to get, right? And so that little example is like, oh, okay, we can actually get a decent amount of my motion back fairly quickly if I'm just diligent enough with how I'm executing this kind of activity.